JazzCast Pros.
Welcome to the Healthy Illness Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Marie. This is the podcast helping you build healthier relationships while living with mental health conditions. I've been spending some time with two longtime friends, Alexa and Idris Wajid, incredible creatives in the world. I don't want to limit it just to our city. They are world-class, worldwide known artists, musicians, chefs. Like they wear the title of creatives and implement that in so many ways, including parenting and marriage. And so this is our wrap up conversation, and we are diving into mindfulness and Blackness. What does that mean? What does that look like? What is it like parenting? How does that resonate with who we are as human beings in this world, and how we can be more gentle with ourselves as we navigate through this life? So like, subscribe, and share. Let us know what you're getting out of the conversation. Leave a comment either right here in the podcasting platform that you're listening to, or you can hit us up. I am at The Front Seat Life. You can find Alexa and Idris at Eat Off Art. Eat Off Art. Like, you can make a living and eat off art on IG. Or you can email me at frontseatlife@gmail.com. So, Alexa, Idris, here we are again. What's next?
Here's a problem that may be a hurdle, an obstacle for, I'll say, again, our people, particularly, specifically Black and brown. Mm-hmm. Is this ability to be still, or the quietness, right? Is in our lifetime and in our upbringing, the association of quiet and stillness and sit your butt down were all negative responses.
Yes.
You better sit your butt down.
Why you sit down? Why you so lazy?
What to do, right? You better be quiet and do what? Right? As a kid, right? So imagine, like, that's the connotation now when you, as an adult, that's your, some of our only, the context that we have.
Yeah.
Well, when somebody tell me to be quiet or close my mouth or just sit still, that's the memory.
Right.
You were in trouble for something. So now we are indoctrinated with that experience. So now it's like, as an adult with the ability to make sense of things, we got to get through that hurdle, right? Mm. Now you are sitting down and being quiet and being still because this is good for you.
Right.
In this world that hasn't stopped moving, that's going to continue moving, continue shifting. How do you regulate yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You must do that now. So that just occurred to me what you were saying.
True.
You know?
It's true.
Even.
And the lazy part too.
You're not
working. I know. Wait, why are you sitting down? Why are you doing this? Because I'm taking a break. Right? You didn't get a chance to do that. There's no time to take a break. You should be upstairs. If you got time to sit down, you got time to be cleaning. No, just sit.
Well, that's generational too.
That's generational trauma.
That's generational.
It is.
And then my real last point though is also about kid trauma, that things that we experienced. Breath, as you mentioned earlier about breathing, right? Breathing is a big part of all these mindfulness practices. When we have people doing their drawing and things of that nature, those are only two things that are going on, really, is that pen moving and them breathing. It's an autonomic, right? So they're not thinking about it, but those are the only two of the things that are really happening. When you meditate, you're breathing. You're coming back to your breath, right? You're focusing on something that's natural, and that's autonomic, automatic, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's there. As children, what happened when you went? What happened with that?
You got in trouble.
There was a cost.
You got an attitude.
Oh, you huffing and puffing?
Mm-hmm.
You huffing and puffing. But studies have shown that response of us going regulates our system. And we were doing that naturally as children because the human body knows what to do in stressful situations. And so we had to unlearn that.
Yeah. We've unlearned everything that is innate in us. It was forced or beaten or talked out of us. Everything that was good for our soul, everything that was good for our mindfulness, our health, it was talked out of us.
Because we didn't know no better.
Because we did. Our people didn't know any better. And, you know, it's.
They did their best.
They did their best. But even in the institutions, when you think about, I think about our boys when they were young, right? You know, in school, sit your butt down. Your boy don't know how to sit down. Because you got them in school 8 hours out of the day listening to yourself. They can't be outside playing. They can't draw. You know, they're doodling on a piece of paper and you yell at them. They get up to stretch, to move themselves, and you yell at them, right? So all of that stuff is just taken away, whether generationally or institutionally. We have to correct all that, right? But, you know, we have children raising children and sometimes it just never gets corrected.
And there's, you guys have said so much, and this is so many points. I'm thinking about the connection to gardening and slavery, right? And this inability for so many Black folks to touch the dirt.
Trauma.
And to be, yes.
Trauma.
Yes.
And it's, but there's healing. So
much healing.
Yes. There's healing in putting your hands in the dirt. And that was taken away from us. Or voluntarily, we said, no, my mama worked in the farm all her life.
I ain't touching,
I ain't touching no dirt.
That's deep.
Yeah.
It's deep.
You know, and it's the same when you think about, you know, any type of creativity, right? Or even entrepreneurs, it's the same thing. You're doing something that you love and you're passionate about it. So you want it to be done full time, but it gets to a point where you have to work so hard at it. And then you need help and you need your kids to help. But then for them, it becomes a burden. It's no longer healing for them because of whatever strain and tension of that have to to bring in the dollar, that it's no longer that healing attribute. Gardening was taken away from us because of convenience and because of needing money. And you couldn't just garden all day because you had to pay the bills or you didn't have the land. So everything that you made went to the person that owned the land. There's so much trauma that we experience and there's so many levels to it and layers.
I remember somebody I looked up to got on me because while they have natural hair in a corporate environment, it was always very neat, very like pristinely kept. And yeah. I'm out here like free balling. I don't know another way. Like it's just. It's just, you know, it's out here. Like, it's clean. It smells like juices and berries. Like, I'm good. You know, and they're like, you can't come to work that way. Like, you know, you can't, it's a poor reflection. I'm like, but you have natural. Mm. But the difference was that it was a certain type of natural. And I'm like, well, this is legit how this grow. So, nope, I didn't comb it today. I mean, if it ain't wet with a whole bunch of, it's not getting combed. Like, this is how I'm showing up. But the pressure then that I felt, and for a while I cut my hair, you know, just had a brush cut. Then, you know, I started regrowing my hair when my youngest, when he was little, there's a picture of me that I gotten taken, really nice brush cut hair. And the prankster, she says, and that's mommy when she was a man. Mommy was a man? Like he was... He's probably like three or four years old. So like he's in awe. And I'm like, so then I let my hair grow back out. I'm like, I'm not a man. If I were, then I would be. And that's fine. But I'm not. So, you know, then I'm like justifying myself to my kid. I'm like, what am I?
But you know what? I had the same thing when our oldest was 6 or 7. Because my hair was short. Buzz cut. Dries used to cut my hair.
Yeah, like, yeah. Lower than this.
And yeah. And I was working full time corporate job and I came into his room. It was right before Mother's Day and I was in a suit and I said, okay, I'm getting ready to leave. He was still in bed. He's like, okay. He's like, are you coming to my school today for the program? I said, yeah, of course I'm going to be there. You know, no doubt. He said, okay, are you wearing that? And it was a pantsuit. I said, yeah, I'm coming from work. This is what I'm wearing. Okay, so you're not going to put on a dress or a skirt? I said, no. He said, okay. He said, well, can you put on a wig or something? Because all the mothers at school have hair, so can you either put on a wig or put on a skirt? I was like, no, I can't. This is me. And I am very happy with who I am. And I am still your mommy. And I'm still proud of you. And I'm still going to hug you when I get to your school. He was traumatized. He was like, what? Yes. Remember that? He was not. He cried. He was like, Mom, can you just please put on a wig? I'm like, no, I'm not putting on a wig.
But yeah.
I get it. I do.
Yeah, but you always, they learn. They know now, like, about you being who you are.
Yeah.
Right? As we tell our children,
yep.
When we stand on principles, you can see me now. You can see me 10 yep. years down the line. My principles are my principles.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So, and part of those principles is being who we are.
Yeah.
Right? Unapologetic, as we said. That's a
new, back to how we started.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
You know, full circle.
Who we are, man.
Who you are.
I mean, I remember one of my children going through school and not getting the type of support I felt they should be receiving from the guidance counselors. And so for me, I'm like reliving City Honors trauma of not getting counseling. And I'm like, we didn't go through all this work for you to be, you didn't go through all this work because you did all the work to be in this space for these people to not give you the information you need, show up for you, tell you how to move in this space. And I'm like, listen, do I need to come to school? No, I can do it myself. Are you sure? If I come, I'm coming as Black mom. So either you handle it or I'm gonna handle it. Nope, I'll do it. And a part of that, you know, in hindsight, it was a threat. Like I threatened my kid, like I'll show up as the Black Black mom because they're not gonna treat you that way. And that's how they're going to see me, because they're not going to see me as a mother that cares for their kid, that's showing up and wants to, you know, make sure. They're going to see me as a threat. And that's what I'm going to be, because this is not a, hi, good morning, how are you conversation. This is a, why ain't you doing what you're supposed to do for my kid conversation. And just that, I don't even call it duality, but that. And it's not shifting. And so many things. One of the children also said once that they heard me code shift on the phone, then they promised that they would never do that. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. For me, it's not code shifting. That is what it is, but that's not what it is. In that, I'm always me. And whether I come, no matter how I show up, I'm still showing up as myself. And while you may not think you code switch in maybe verbiage or tone of your voice, you don't speak to me the way you speak to your friends. Is that code switching? I'm not becoming someone else. This Kelly actually is the Kelly that was created and cultivated by Esther Evil Wolford. Like, this is who she is. The other Kelly is who I had to struggle to kind of find and become because I was Black in America, going and, you know, being in Buffalo public schools, getting in fights for not being, you know, Black enough. When my name is Akila, wisdom, one who thinks before she speaks. I can tell you about the seven principles. I know what the red, black, and the green stands for. And because I speak well, you mistake that for something I am not. Right. And so now for me, as a way of protection, I had to embody the appearance of Blackness in order to feel safe. So this Kelly is actually this her, this me, this just who I am. I can, if I need to show you not to mistake my kindness for weakness, because I'm not weak. And if that is what you need to see in order to realize who I am, I ain't a killer, but don't push me. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't, Right. And so there's this duality, multi, whatever the word is, in blackness and in brownness in America, probably other places, but this is the only place I know, like the back of my hand. Right. So that affects, can affect, right, somebody's mental health, right? That struggle for who to be, how to, you know, and who has your back.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that. There's no, yeah, that's a whole nother. I think that's a whole nother series you're going to have to do to talk about that, because we learn at an early age. I mean, like you're talking about mental health, particularly, like from a very early age when we are still cognitively developing, we have to be a particular person in the house. You have to be a particular person with the sibling. You have to be a particular person on the bus. You have to be a particular person in the classroom. You have to be a particular person in each of the different classes that you're in for seven periods, right? Like, you literally have to, and nobody teaches you. You're not taught. It is like this adaptation and this need. Yeah, like, I guess the word is adapting, right? Yeah. This need to always be adapting. And in the adapting, that's why as adults, most people can't even tell you who they really are, because they haven't had the time or the space to investigate and find and settle on, like, this is who I am.
But when you're a child, that's called resiliency.
And that's without even adding trauma. Like, that's not, that's without even adding, like, life trauma.
Right.
Exactly.
That's no adverse childhood experiences. That's just living.
No. That's just the living part.
And that's where that resiliency comes in, because we adapted to just moving and shifting to whatever we were in, because that's what we had to do in order to be safe.
So for our, you know, for our children, for us, we have our, you know, it's not perfect. And I don't even take that back. It shouldn't even, it's not expected to be perfect.
No.
I can't even say it's excellent, but it's good. And what's good about it is the relationship we have with our children is better in regards to our transparency than what we had with our parents, right? And I'm not comparing how we parent to how our parents parent. Everybody does what they are capable of doing to the capacity they're doing it. I'm just very thrilled and happy that I have a partner that is cool with making sure that we check in with our children.
And even if
they don't share what's really going on,
we can tell.
We not only can we tell, but the bottom line is that, do we check in?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't remember getting checked in, though.
Mm-mm. I don't remember getting asked anything.
Like, how you feeling today? Are you feeling okay? Like, those conversations wouldn't happen.
No.
Right? So the fact that we're able to engage with our children in that manner, we may not be even able to fix it.
Right.
However, tapping in so I know where you are is helpful.
Yeah.
Period. It's helpful. So now I know how we need to move a little bit, you know. I may not be on your neck today about washing dishes,
but I will be tomorrow.
You know what I'm saying? Little reprieve. I might not be,
right. I'm like, okay, no, okay, I got you, right? You know when to push and when to pull and when to flow. And so communication is a big part of all of the stuff we're talking about.
Marriage, you know? Kids, work, everything.
Yeah.
And mindfulness, just knowing that, you know, I need a minute.
Yes, that is so important.
As simple as that. It is. And being comfortable enough to say it and confident enough to receive that. There's a difference.
I recently told one of my kids, you know, we're, I don't know what kind of space we're in, but I let them know all I can do is help you heal, right? Who I was is who I was and am a product of my environment. The illness on top of that created an environment for you all not to be raised in a healthy environment. But I literally can't change yesterday, right? Like, I'm not trying to minimize the trauma. I don't know what you all have been through. I was there sometimes and not there. Even when I was present, I wasn't present. All I could do is show you that healing is possible. And I can help you in that process if you want me to engage you in that way, right? If for your healing, we never speak again, that will hurt me, but I'm gonna be okay. I have a therapist. I have a wellness routine that is not what I want for us, but what I want for you is happiness, wellness, wholeness, completeness. And if that means we can't have the type of relationship I would like to have, I'm willing to give all of that up for you to have those things. Because then what type of parent am I if I'm forcing you to show up in a way I want you to? That's not healthy, right? That's not me healing. Oh, you my kid. And if I say call, you call. Like, that's not,
ooh,
right? Like, do I want, ooh, something else? Do I desire to have it? Yes, but people have to be empowered to just be. And I accept them where they are for who they are right now. Because I have to accept me for where I am, who I am right now, without judgment, right? Going back to mindfulness, without guilt, with that. And that's a journey. Like, do I wish life could have been different for you? I can't even say that I can, that the answer to that is yes, because where would any of us be, right? Your greatness may be dependent upon you healing from something that occurred. Like, I don't know.
Absolutely.
And yeah. So I don't want to rob anyone from their journey and their purpose, but you have to do the work in order to get to that space, right? Like, whether it's just life, like we were talking about, or there's some serious trauma that impacts that life in whatever way it does, there's still a healing. There's still a growth. It's people that had healthy homes and healthy childhoods and that still struggle, right? So not having those things doesn't mean you're struggle free. So I can't say if you did. It might have been worse without all of the things that occurred. Like, perhaps there was some protection there that we just don't see because we remember the trauma. I don't know, because I can't change yesterday. Like, I can't go back and ask questions, right? All I can do is be present in this moment and do the best that I can to ensure that right now is okay. And the next moment will take care of itself. But hopefully, based upon the work I'm doing today, tomorrow will be better. I can't say that it will be, but that's my hope, right? For me, that's my hope. It's like planting a seed. You don't plant the seed and say, man, this isn't going to grow. You plant it with the hope and expectation, right? You water it. You make sure it has the right temperature. It's got the sunlight, right? If it doesn't grow, then that's another issue. But you don't plant the seed with the intention of it not growing. Because otherwise, why plant the seed?
Why bother?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
All of that to say, I appreciate you guys. And
we love you.
Appreciate you.
Life be life. And I love you too.
It does.
And right, all the mindfulness doesn't prevent life from lifing.
No. Yeah, but it allows you to work with it.
Yeah.
And know that there's an end or break in the lifing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the mindfulness does not stop life from lifing. Mm-hmm. However, it is the one moment that you are in full control.
Ooh.
That's it right there. Period. With a T. The first time I did the mountain guided meditation, they just go on a journey walking up a mountain. And what do you see? And so you draw the mountain in your mind. Like, is it, do you come up to a path? And so you could walk yourself through this journey up the mountain. You know, does the mountain have one peak? Does it have two peaks? Is it snow covered? Is the sun out? You know, is there wildlife? Do you see a stream, you know, off in the distance? Or do you hear the birds, you know, chirping? Do you see little animals scampering around? And then when you get to the mountain, you're breathing, you get to the top of the mountain and you expand yourself to become the mountain. When, like, the first time I was like, oh, because in that moment, I felt different. Like, I felt like the mountain, the connection to the ground, to the strength of the boulders and the rocks and the dirt, and knowing that there's life emanating from my body. Like, it was the dopest experience. And other people probably were like, yeah, I mean, like, I just walked up the mountain. But and so I go back there and I walk myself up the mountain and just like inhale and just take on the frame of the mountain. And that has been, I would say, like the most uplifting of like the guided meditations. And maybe I was in a place that day and just, you know, needed to feel stronger, or I don't know, but.
Is that on YouTube or something?
I'll listen to a couple of them first and send you a good one because they don't all be
okay.
Good.
Yeah. Share the tools, man. Yes. Share the tools.
Just not Lil Jon's. Not for us.
I thank you guys so much. You're the best. I love you.
We love you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time. It's always good talking to you.
You two are incredible human beings, and I am just so thankful to know you, thankful that you just spent some time with me here on the podcast. We go back so far, but, you know, I've known a lot of people for decades, and it's just not the same. And so I am honored and truly appreciate knowing you and having you two in my lives in the way that you show up for me and just, you know, hold space for me and keep me focused and remind me of all of the things that I am. And so I thank you for loving me and accepting me, right? We've had these conversations about, you know, pulling away and separating and why I do that, but you two have always just accepted me in that space and always welcomed me with open arms. So I thank you. I love you. I appreciate you. Keep giving, keep being your incredible selves. And until the next time, if you are looking for resources and don't know where to go, you can dial 211 on your phone or go to 211 in your browser. And if you need someone to talk to, you're experiencing a tough time right now, or you have a family member that is experiencing a tough time, or a friend, someone that you're with right now, and you don't know what to say, you can dial 988. Dial 988 on your phone. You can text 988 and you'll be connected to a person who is trained to be able to assist you in your time of need. You are not alone. We are diving into season 7, and this season is all about mental health and movement. What and how does movement help us in our quest, our journey for better mental health? So I have some great guests coming up. Mary Beth, Onward Run Coach, is coming on the show. Soda Kuchkowski from The Doze Podcast on the Jazzcast Bros Network will be on the show. This is going to be an incredible season. So I welcome you to come on back, dive in deep. We are going into movement and mental health in all the ways that our bodies need movement, whether the movement is being still, because that's a movement, or running or walking or yoga, all of the things that the body can do in order to stay mentally healthy. So until the next time, I encourage you to be the light.
Hi, I'm Kelly.
And I'm Kelly,
the host of Getting Real with Bossy, the real, raw, and honest podcast about small business ownership.
We created Bossy to be a safe place to ask the hard questions and to get support that's necessary.
With our experience, 9 businesses and over 25 years, we continue to bear it all and share what we wish we had known.
We move past the must be nices and start getting real. Come along as we interview small business owners and get the true story.
Leave with another tool for the next time you feel alone on this journey.
Business ownership leads to unexpected knowledge. What are you an expert at?
Tell us at Getting Real with Bossy and subscribe today.